KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can hear the show at KCRW.com. You probably know my guest, Jason Schwartzman, certainly from movies such as Rushmore. This summer, he had Funny People. It's a pretty great fall for him. He's got the great new series, Bored to Death, on HBO, and the new Wes Anderson movie, his first animated film, The Fantastic Mr. Fox. Jason, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is very exciting.
It is for me, too. One of the things I've always wanted to ask you is that you play a lot of characters who are incredibly verbal and such a narcissist, and so in love with the sounds of their own voices. It's a real interesting sort of skill you have. And obviously, from watching a lot of that dialogue is improvised, you can sort of see the characters kind of just taken with their own kind of self-regard or their need to be the center of attention. And I wonder where these performances come from for you. We can start with Jonathan Ames and Bored to Death.
Yeah. Really, it's Jonathan Ames, the writer, who my character in the show is also Jonathan Ames. Really, I'm just saying these new lines that Jonathan Ames has written for me, and I think that's why he was crucial to do his own adaptation and to be, you know, to turn this short story into a TV show. A lot of it, in the short story at least, there's not as much dialogue. A lot of it's very internal. So he was so great at adapting it and turning it into a character who's talking out loud. And
compulsively talking out loud.
Yeah, compulsively talking out loud. That's why it's difficult to turn books into movies. A lot of it's internal. It's a real skill to transpose that into the medium of film. I guess voiceover, you know, you can use, but to have these characters speak out loud and say what they're thinking out loud in a way that doesn't seem
too much of a device.
Yeah, exactly. It's a difficult thing, and it's an art form. And I think that Jonathan Ames did an incredible job adapting his short story into this TV show.
But you've done that in other things. That kind of thing is part of Max and Rushmore. Mm-hmm. It's part of your character in Funny People even.
Right.
Even your Louis XIV and Marie Antoinette is one of these guys who likes to talk. And it's fascinating to see an actor who can do that. Because I've always wondered if Woody Allen was somebody for you in terms of that sort of verbal ability, the spar, who was kind of in some way, maybe even subconsciously, a model for you.
Well, Of course, Woody Allen is an inspiration and somewhat of a model. I mean, he's amazing. Even though these are French movies, Jean-Pierre Léaud and the Truffaut movies, he's incredible the way he says what he's thinking and is extremely verbal. And if you watch those movies, even The Mother and the Whore, have you seen that film?
Yes.
Though that's not a Truffaut movie. That is, like, to me, the epitome of the guy talking out loud about what he's thinking, but somehow making it totally watchable and going with this guy and following him for almost 3 hours or maybe over. I don't know how long the movie
is. It's over 3 hours. It's fascinating to hear you say it just because it's not self-conscious when Leo does it.
Yeah.
And it kind of became his thing.
Yeah.
And he's sort of doing the same character to some extent in all those movies.
Right, yeah.
He started as a teenager with Truffaut. But for you, it's not like you're playing the same guy every time you do it. And just finding a way to give those characters a grounding in each context, I find to be completely fascinating.
Wow. Well, thank you. That means a lot. I mean, I don't know what to say. That's very nice of you to say that. And to go back to the Léaud thing, I've always wondered, because we're reading it, because it's subtitled, I wonder how much of that it plays into it as well, because it's like we're hearing it in this beautiful language. I don't speak French with confidence. Whenever I've been in Paris, whenever I've been there, when I'm by myself at a table, I prepare what I'm going to say to myself in French, I just kind of piece together, like, I would like to have this. And then when the guy comes over, I just say it in English. I totally back out. Because I think you need to have a certain amount of just confidence and believe in yourself as you're saying these things in French and get into the accent and the musicality of the language. And I totally chicken out when it's time to actually say what I've been practicing by myself at the table or just before I get into a taxi. I'm like, okay, I'm going to tell the taxi that this is where I need to be and here's the name of the street. And then I go and I totally back out. I say it just very flat. I say it in English, and then I say the street that is in French. I just say it. And then I end up, the guy doesn't understand what I'm saying, so I end up just showing the words to him on a piece of paper. I point to the word, this is where I'm going.
By the way, it's the treatment. The non-French speaker I'm speaking to is Jason Schwartz. Yeah. And his new HBO show, of course, is Bored to Death, and he's also in The Fantastic Mr. Fox. But you talked about musicality.
Yes.
And clearly a kind of music in the way you speak for these characters comes to mind. Now, I wonder, for Jonathan, what he listens to. Is he a Modern Lovers listener? I mean, what – because that feels like the kind of thing that he would listen to.
Well, one thing I do before I begin work, one of the two things that I'd like to just sort of dream up is what the character wears and what his wardrobe is, but also what type of music he would listen to. And I kind of make these playlists for the characters, and I try to listen to that music exclusively while I'm working, or music that is in the atmosphere of what I'm working on, even if it's not like exactly what my character would listen to himself. Jonathan, the character, that's a difficult question. I had to ask myself, what kind of music does he listen to? And I actually never figured out his particular taste in music.
Really?
But what I ended up listening to a lot of was spy music, noir music, and a lot of jazz. I don't have a deep knowledge of jazz the way some people do. I'm very basic. I need a guide into the world of jazz. But I listened to a lot of New York jazz while I was working on the show, because I would walk the streets listening to jazz or listening to Henry Mancini. In fact, before every take, I would listen to Pink Panther for a quick second and then throw it off, only when I was in detective mode.
Okay.
I guess there's a romanticism about it all, and that I was just trying to – I wanted to get romantic. With New York.
Which explains the saxophone in the theme
song,
doesn't
it? Yeah, saxophone. I just wanted to make friends with that part of myself and to get romantic with it and listening to Pink Panther and, you know, listening to lots of vibraphone music.
Because it's also the kind of thing we tend to associate with noir anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So it would make sense.
And there's lots of great noir compilations, actually, that I was able to get a hold of and listening to themes, you know, for the Maltese Falcon, and just listening to a lot of noir and a lot of spoken word and just thinking about that stuff a lot and listening to that basically exclusively for the 4 months that I was working.
It's interesting because there's a real dynamism to that music that kind of belies what he actually is doing. He's not particularly a dynamic character.
Yeah, so. Right, exactly. but in terms of, working on these characters and, you know, I've been very fortunate to have worked with really great directors and really great writers, and often the writers are the directors. And
it's most often been the case for you.
Yes, it has. And these characters, they're just well written. You know, I'm trying as hard as I can to, and I'm not a, there are other actors who are masters of minimalism and of deadpan and of subtlety. Sometimes I struggle with those things just because of, you know, I use my hands a lot, and that's not minimal. But my goal is to just get out of the way of the great writing as much as possible, because these characters, they really are so well written. I'm just trying to, I guess, do as little as possible and just not put as much on the words, because the words are so beautifully written. I'm just trying to just play the music as written and not try to put, you know, too much of myself in it, although I'm sure it comes out just naturally. You know, I'm very fortunate, like I say, to work with people like Wes or with David O. Russell, these great writer-directors, and Sofia Coppola. They've worked so painstakingly to write the material clearly and simply that I want to not tamper with it, and I want to just do it the best I can and do them justice and, you know, justify their time spent writing the piece. You know what I mean? They could spend 3 years writing something and someone can come in and conceivably just ruin it. So I want to just do the best that I can for them.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to a man in need of a jazz education, Jason Schwartz.
Thank you.
His new series on HBO is Bored to Death.
The jazzification
of Jason Schwartzman. You can tell the listeners what the show's about.
Yeah, okay. So the show is called Bored to Death. It's a new half-hour comedy on HBO. on Sunday nights. I play a young writer named Jonathan Ames whose girlfriend breaks up with him in the opening minutes of the first episode.
She's leaving at the beginning of the
She's
show.
She's moving out. I mean, the movies have been called, and most of the apartment's actually in the truck when the show opens up. There's just a mattress coming down. She's leaving him because she feels like, you know, he's not writing his second novel the way he should be, although he is. It's just we don't see a lot of him writing because, you know, writing is a very tricky thing, and especially now that people write on their computers and there's the internet and there's internet backgammon and things to get distracted by. So he's playing a little bit too much internet backgammon. And
having a little bit too much white
wine.
Well,
she thinks he's an alcoholic.
Okay.
He argues that her father's the alcoholic and it's projection. He will admit that he has white wine. He has two glasses of white wine a night and a medicinal hit of marijuana.
And almost some meth in the pilot.
Yeah, almost some meth. And basically, she's just saying you aren't active. You don't take charge of your life. You haven't taken command. You don't live life. And she leaves him. And I guess we find him in the beginning of the show in a heartbroken and desperate because we do tend to love the person as they're leaving. That's the moment when it all is fully realized. It's like we have 20/20 vision in that exact moment. We're like, wait, don't go. You are the one. I'm sorry. You know.
And she has a great line. You're waiting to tell me as a truck is packed? Now you're telling me
exactly,
this?
Exactly, yeah. A little too late. And so anyway, she leaves him, and he's heartbroken. As he's walking back up to his apartment, his neighbor tells him he's got to rebound quickly, go on Craigslist, meet a girl. So he goes upstairs, and he's now looking at his apartment minus her possessions and how empty the closet is without her dresses and stuff in it. And just feels he feels empty, and the apartment feels empty, and he feels sad. And he's moving some stuff around, and he knocks over a stack of books, and he finds Farewell, My Lovely, Raymond Chandler. And I guess in his heartbrokenness, he puts his sadness into rereading old detective novels, Dashiell Hammett, Goodis, Chandler. And I think that, and you don't see this in the show exactly, but he wants to be a hero like these guys, like these private detectives. They're strong. They don't seem like guys who could get their heart broken. They seem like real men, men that a woman wouldn't leave. His girlfriend wouldn't have left. You know, one of these private detectives are strong. And so he puts himself up like kind of like a Hail Mary pass or a lark or just something. It's a defibrillator moment where he needs to shock himself into some kind of a new life. So he puts himself up as a private detective for hire on Craigslist. He says he's not licensed but that his fees are reasonable. And he does it, and then I think he kind of forgets about it. Shortly thereafter, he does, in fact, get a missing person's case, and he has to go find a missing woman whose drug addict boyfriend has also vanished. So he thinks there's a correlation, and basically he's very quickly sucked into the world of being a private detective. Drugs, alcohol, sex, violence all ensue, and the season is him struggling to write, struggling to get his girlfriend back, be less heartbroken, and become a better private detective, which he actually is kind of good at. And it's not a show that's a parody of private detectives, or he's not a bumbling private detective. He's not a bad private detective, and it's not a joke like, oh, give me a whiskey. He believes he can really help people. He's trying to emulate his heroes. He's like, you know, how Don Quixote reads enough books on chivalry and decides to become a knight. My character reads enough private detective books that he decides to become a private detective to save him.
Sure, we'll take a break. My guest is Jason Schwartz, and his new show on HBO is Bored to Death. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm not bored to death. It's The Treatment. More to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm talking to Jason Schwartzman, musician, one of the most stylish men in America.
Yeah.
actor, screenwriter, and star of the new HBO series, Bored to Death. He's also in the new Wes Anderson film, The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
We, for the people at home, we're both wearing Band of Outsiders.
It's fabulous stuff.
Clothes. And it's very, it's amazing.
Yeah, well, it looks better on you than on me.
But that is not true. That is not true.
It is true. But as you were talking, I thought about that great line about Philip Marlowe, A Knight in Search of a Mission. Mm. Which really applies to Jonathan here.
Yeah.
He's fascinated by other people, but also in that way that he wants to tell other people about himself.
That's absolutely right.
And we were talking before, and you mentioned Stolen Kisses, and I mentioned The Long Goodbye.
Yeah.
These things that are ostensibly about prioritizing, but really are about guys in search of behavior.
That's right. That's well put.
And that's what the show feels like to me, because there's no better place to be that guy than in Brooklyn. And then crossing over to Manhattan, which is a sort of magical island for him too.
Right.
And it's all really interesting stuff.
I think he's in search of feeling alive, like some kind of a life experience. I don't think, he's bored, as the title suggests, but I do think that he's a bit lost and really struggling to feel alive and to feel happy and to feel like he's living.
Well, the great moment in the shows I've seen four so far is that after he undergoes one of these adventures, he's terrified it's happening. But after it's happened, he's relating to people. He's really living. I mean, you can see the excitement he got out of it.
Yeah, he is charged. You're right. One thing that I think is so beautiful is we begin usually with Jonathan, who lives in Brooklyn. His friend is Zach Galifianakis, who's a comic book illustrator. And Zach is in a bit of a sexless yet loving relationship with a woman.
And also desperately needs to make contact, too.
Yes,
in a lot of ways, they're kind of the same guy.
I think all of them are the same guy.
Including Ted Danson's character,
I think they're all the same guy. They're all just in different places.
I was going to ask you, and you also work for Ted Danson's guy.
Yeah. I'm a struggling writer, but I do freelance journalism for Ted Danson. He is the editor of a gigantic New York magazine, and I do a society column, and I'll write articles for him.
And you're kind of also his enabler as well.
I am his enabler, but that's not during business hours. What I love about the shows is that we begin with Jonathan, and we stay in Brooklyn, and then he will cross over to Manhattan, the magical island, as you've said, to meet with Ted, to get assignments, or to give him pot if he needs pot. And I like seeing the worlds separate. I like seeing Brooklyn by itself and Manhattan by itself, and I like seeing Jonathan's small apartment, his dirty apartment, and his coffee houses or wherever he mingles and enjoys life with Zach, and seeing a rich, more upscale New York when he's with Ted. And then the third world of these cases that he goes on, a real seedy, dark side or eccentric side of New York, because sometimes it's not always seedy. I mean, there's some stolen sperm that's sold on the black market in some of the episodes. I can't talk too much about it. But anyway, all of a sudden I'm talking to them about how they need to give this money back or give this sperm back. But if they seem like they actually could help me with my broken heart, or they seem brokenhearted, well, then I become less professional and I actually seek advice from them and end up needing their help too. And what I like about it is, like, my character doesn't seem far off from the bad guys.
Well, every case he's investigating, he comes to empathize, because it's basically each of these situations, one way or another, about kind of a romance that's gone off the rails.
Exactly.
And then he completely connects with that part of it.
Yeah, exactly. He relates to these guys, and I think that's nice. Is like, he goes from being a private eye to being a brokenhearted writer to being a brokenhearted writer private eye to being a journalist in New York. Like, there's so many places that he goes as a character, and then they all start to blend together. And that's when it really gets interesting and funny to me. But I do like how my character actually is just as brokenhearted as the people he's trying to catch or find, and he could use their help too. So he doesn't pull rank on any of these people. He's not like
a
snob.
But he's also not an outsider either.
No,
all these guys who are his heroes are.
Exactly.
He really feels what they're feeling. By the way, my guest, you can tell he's a drummer because he's banging on the table, is Jason Schwartzman. His new show on HBO is Bored to Death. And he's also one of the little foxes in The Fantastic Mr. Fox. We were talking before we got started about just the whole process of you meeting writers and connecting with Jonathan Ames. And I wonder if you think yourself as much a writer as you are an actor, because you certainly shape material. You worked on the screenplay for Darjeeling Limited. That's got to be a part of you that feels like, I mean, you want to control your destiny to some extent, so the writing gives you some avenue to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's something that I would like to do more of. I rewrote the Darjeeling Limited together, and I'm never the type of person to just go in when someone's, like I said earlier, written a script and spent years on it and start to give them ideas or, you know what I mean? I never want to do that unless I'm given permission to do so or asked a question about if I have any ideas or anything like that.
I got to imagine most of the people you work with, as you mentioned, the writer-directors, seek collaboration. I know Sophia does. I mean,
yeah.
she really wants that. I mean,
yeah.
She feels like the actors are as much creators as she,
right.
And the scripts are often skeletal and
yeah.
demand that kind of thing.
Well, it's interesting. I've worked with a variety of different people, and they're all open to something happening in the moment. But some scripts I find are more like blueprints. Some are actually the thing you're going for. But I do think just in general that a script is like a blueprint for a house. It's got all of the details are written. This angle, this floor should be here, this window should be here. It is a blueprint, but when you go to build it, you do run into all kinds of problems or questions that weren't answered. What type of glass do you want? How thick is the glass? Just things that maybe you hadn't foreseen when you were writing it. And so one must adapt in the moment the actual construction of the script. That's the place I think that we're talking about. That's not the writing and it's not the acting. It's the middle place where it's like the bridge from the writing to the acting, where detailed decisions are being made and audibles are being called, last-minute audibles, to actually make the stuff work. Because, for instance, you can have a character enter a scene and say and yell across a room, "Hey, I'm home." But then when you get to the set, you realize, well, he wouldn't have to yell because the door is right there and everyone's sitting right here. So the yelling doesn't really work. So what's the – you know what I mean? So things must be adjusted, or at least myself. I by the way, for anyone who's listening, if anyone is still listening – I just know – I don't actually know what works for me. It changes every time, and every time I begin work, I begin with – fear is not the right word, but a feeling of I don't know what I'm doing, and I get nervous to start work. You work with great professionals, and you just don't want to be the one guy who wasn't right and or wasn't prepared. And I was never formally trained – in terms of with the actual acting coach, but I've, you know, I think over the years I've learned from watching my heroes or actors that I've admired, working with my mother, who's an actress, who growing up with her, I guess, was like an acting class. I don't have a method that I completely go with.
But you developed a technique over the years, have you not?
Well, a loose technique, or at least things that I know that I got to do to make me feel very comfortable. Anyway, what I was going to say was, so I don't want to preach or seem like I have the answer. I feel like if you want to ask about acting, you talk to Bill Murray or, you know what I mean, talk to one of the real masters. For me, it's very important to be very as prepared as I think I can be and also just have a feet don't fail me now. 1% of just hope that it all is going to work. Do you know what I mean? Like, because I don't know what it is. It's like you can get along with someone in emails and then you go on a date and it's just really – there's no chemistry. And the same thing can apply to any situation in life and really can happen with acting and with getting people together in a movie. So like a director and you can get along and all, and then you go to work and some days it's great and some days for whatever reason it's just like – just really hard. I try to just be open to doing anything to make it work. And my main thing is get as close to the director as possible or the writer as possible and be near them as much as you can. Because I find that if I say, can we meet for an hour? Then when you get there, 30 minutes of it is just spent like talking about worries and then another. And then you never actually get to talking about material. So if I can just be as near to the person as possible throughout the day, if they have an office, be in the waiting room working. Make that your office.
Hmm.
If the guy is in New York and you're in Los Angeles, move to New York.
You just find that proximity helps.
I find that it's in passing when, like, work gets done. It's like if the person's like, walk with me to the walk with me to get a coffee. Well, then, like, I feel like it's there that something happens that you didn't plan for.
It's the treatment, my guess, is the Jack Parcells of acting.
Yeah.
Jason Schwartzman, he's starring in the new HBO comedy series Bored to Death. He's also one of the voices in The Fantastic Mr. Fox. But as you were talking about that, because we've had people come on the show before who say they feel like they do their best directing when they're not telling somebody what to do.
Right.
But in fact, just giving code words and that thing you're talking
right.
about.
Shorthand.
When you have a relationship,
yeah.
then you know how to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
And as often as not, you've worked with directors who are not only writer-directors, but people with whom you spent a lot of time. So you have that kind of proximity mm-hmm. in emotional terms with them anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's going to help you to some extent too, does it not?
Absolutely. First of all, yes, it helps, and I'll go into that in greater detail in 1 second. At the same time, it's always hard. And it's not hard in the way that you hear other people where they're on set and it's like miserable and it's intense the whole time. To me, the fun of it is when it's not working and figuring it out.
So you like that anxiety, that sort of sense of trying to get your hands around it.
I don't like anxiety. I don't like the pitch, like the frequency of worry and anxiety and fear like that. It's not coming from negativity and yelling and come on, let's get this. And why isn't this working? It's more just about each take is an experiment. And it's a place where you have the freedom to completely fail. That's where it's fun. Like, it's the work. You're working. You're trying to get it right. You're just trying. But that said, going back to the shorthand, you know, I do think that when you know people well or you have a history with them, they know a lot about you and they can reference things in your own life that maybe they know about. Like, hey, remember that time we were all here? It's like that.
Okay.
You have that personal index with someone or they know just how to say something to you in very few words. When you're really communicating with someone, it's a total ecstasy for me. I don't need the conflict to make it work. I don't need the stress. Some people need it. It's like an emotional version of cutting yourself to feel something. You know what I mean? I don't need to cut myself, but I do like to feel like we're all working and it's exciting. And because, you know, I don't work often just out of chance. It's happened that I work in this weird way. But when I do work, I want to work really hard. Everybody on a set is pulling their own weight. So as much as that guy's going to work, that's how hard I'm going to work. So if he's carrying something that's really heavy, I'm going to carry something that's heavy just in a different way.
Well, we're out of time. I'd like to talk to you more, but as I said earlier, that train has sailed. So please come back and do the show.
All right, Austin. All right, Austin.
Jason, please come back anytime you want.
Hey,
it's good having you
here. I'll be back right now. I'm not leaving.
Okay, well, I guess I have to, so because okay. We're running out of time here. My guest is Jason Schwartzman. His
great.
New series on HBO is Bored to Death. He's also one of the voices in The Fantastic Mr. Fox. Our recording engineer at KCRW is Mario Diaz. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey is the producer. I'm not a percussionist. I'm just Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.